Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Twelfth Night's Bride by E. Elizabeth Watson, narrated by Isla Jacobs. Chapter 1. Urquhart Castle, Scottish Highlands, 24th of December, 1545.
A little further, man,
Aeliana encouraged her brother's horse as she rode hard through the snowy glen. The beastly stallion panted, leaping over drifts with fringed hooves. She leaned over his neck, which lunged and retracted with each bound, while his mane blew wildly in her face, her hands close to the bit. A bundle, wedged between her belly and the saddle pommel, threatened to jostle loose. She pressed her stomach into it to keep the stolen goods in place, and glanced over her shoulder, fearful of her pursuer.
Mayhap we've lost the Cretan.
The snow was falling in thick gusts by the time she thundered across the bridge to Urquhart Castle's gatehouse, blazing beneath the portcullis. Her brother's head guardsman came out of the gatehouse to investigate.
"'Tis only me, Sir Donegal,' she called, sweating, and pulled the reins back to stop the horse short.
"'Lady Eliana, why arrive in such haste, interest in truce?'
Sir Donegal asked as soldiers craned their necks through the merlins atop the curtain wall to see if danger lurked in the hills beyond. Aye, she wore pants, a tunic, a cloak and boots. With her hair pulled back tightly and hidden in the neckline of her cloak, she likely looked like a skinny lad.
No reason, she replied. I thought to give the horse a good romp, considering he'd been cooped up during our fine weather.
A lie, but Aeliana flashed a confident smile as she gestured to the falling snow as dusk darkened the already grey sky, looming over the fabled Loch Ness. Fine weather indeed. She shrugged nonchalantly, for good measure, and draped a hand over her bundle of thieved vegetables, holding it steady while she flung her cloak over her shoulder and dismounted, though her heart pumped from the exertion. Fear, at being caught, trickled through her blood like spring snowmelt down a mountain, and was just as icy. This food, pilfered from that bastard Laird James Moidertach MacDonald, the once outlawed Earl of Ross, would feed Urquhart's inhabitants for one night, and a thin broth it would make it that. But her people were desperate, thanks to the devil MacDonald's aggression toward them, and scant nourishment was better than none.
These vegetables are the least the ruthless MacDonald can do for us.
Life had been lean since the MacDonald's last raid 2 years ago, which had seen her people evicted. Laird MacDonald had occupied Urquhart, and it had been thanks to the Earl of Huntly himself for demanding the Laird relinquish the stronghold back to her brother, Laird Grant. But not before he and his ruffians had depleted their buttery, packed away their livestock, and devastated their seed stock for planting. Meaning the last two harvests had been paltry at best, in spite of the meagre grains her brother had bartered from the Frasers. And to add insult to injury, this last growing season had been unseasonably wet. They'd reaped an even worse harvest than before. Their petition for a recompense from the MacDonalds still sat before the Crown, and if it wasn't awarded soon, they would surely starve this winter.
Are you sure you're being honest, Lady Aliana?
Donegal persisted as she passed off the reins to the lone stable groom, the seneschal's son. Trepidation ate at her. She'd barely escaped MacDonald's hunting camp, for his men had made chase as she stole away to the glen at the base of Cairn A, where she'd stashed her horse for her flight home. She glanced over her shoulder again. The hills that loomed over Urquhart were shrouded in fog from the snowflakes falling down onto the frozen banks of the loch. Her stomach dropped. A shape emerged from the fog, like a death knell, the thudding of hooves growing louder, bright, tightly woven red plaid, blonde hair, in part flowing free, in part braided, and shoulders shielded in fur, rode out of the hills atop a leathery black destrier.
Damn the man. He'd followed her trail. Of course I'm being honest, she croaked to Sir Donegal, who levelled a glare at her.
She lifted her chin, having claimed the lie and knowing she must own it.
I must depart.
She hurried away, clutching the vegetables.
Look lively,
a sentry called, while Grant's soldiers clattered to positions.
Drop the portcullis,
shouted another, and the chains ground on the winches, the forces of earth pulling it down to land with a rattling pound.
Ready at arms. It's Devil MacDonald. Inform the laird. Arches to the walls.
Aeliana jogged through the yard, sodden by cartwheels, and ducked through the kitchen door.
Sakes. Anger at herself nipped at her heels. She'd been so sure she could outsmart the hunting party and get home unscathed. And now she'd brought trouble to their threshold.
Her brother, Seamus, didn't need to fend off the likes of their enemy after all that had passed between their clans. The kitchens were hot, with dinner's meagre preparations. Flatbreads baked in the ovens from what flour grains they had been able to grow and harvest this past autumn, and leftover venison boiled in a pot to make a broth.
Good day, Lady Aeliana.
The head cook curtsied, oblivious to the mounting commotion outside.
A good day it is.
Aeliana dumped the bundle onto the scullery table. Dried carrots, onions, leeks and beans tumbled across the board.
We have a wee blessing for our supper, but you must cook it with haste. Goodness,
the cook exclaimed, as the other kitchen maids gathered around the bounty in awe. Aeliana smiled, but a pinch of sadness sparked in her chest that these basic foods should be so exciting.
Does God favour us this Christmas tide? The cook continued. You've obviously made some fruitful bartering.
A lie, she'd let them believe, for there had certainly been no bartering.
Quick, Aeliana instructed, ignoring the cook's remark. Chop and boil it, so we might eat it fast, and say not a word that I delivered anything. Whatever for?
The cook replied.
Such a quantity can be divided in two, and shared with tomorrow night's bread. Look no a gift horse in the mouth,
Aeliana urged, adding a grin in hopes it would put them at ease. But they must eat the evidence. The commotion from outside now echoed within the castle. Seamus's demands for reinforcements rang through the great hall. She swallowed, then urged.
We could use a fillin' meal, and for once feel satisfied.
The cook bobbed in another curtsy and began doling out orders, and Aeliana shook the snow off her cloak onto the rushes, then dashed through the kitchen, out into the corridor, and up the winding stairs to where her bedchamber was located. She shoved through the door, barred it, and flung her cloak upon a chair, kicked off her boots, stripped the trousers so that she wore only her hose and tunic, still damp from her ride, and hastened into a simple brown gown, just as plain as she was.
M'lady,
came a masculine call at the door, accompanied by a knock.
Donegal, that was quick.
M'lady, Devil MacDonald storms our gates and demands to see ye for his own eyes. He swears a lad stole away with his goods from his travelling party and rode to safety here.
We've sworn the only person to pass our gates this eve is the youngest sister of Laird Grant, but he'll nae be deterred until he sees ye. Your brother tries to placate the Navitch, but he threatens to return with more men if we dinna comply, or worse, complain to Huntly.
She sucked in hard, then exhaled. Her brother would know it was her who had committed this thievery, for it wasn't as if she was innocent of such a crime.
One moment, Donegal.
She raced back to the door, having yet to catch her breath, and knew her cheeks were splotched with sunbursts from her exertion. Opening it, she twirled around to the man, giving him her back without greeting.
Lace me up, quickly, she breathed.
God have mercy, lass, the guardsman muttered with exasperation, but thankfully he was used to her unorthodox mannerisms, for he'd been her dear friend since childhood, her first kiss, and her father's finest squire.
"'Twas ye, was it nay? That bundle on your saddle? You've invited trouble of the worst kind, for MacDonald will bring another raiding party if he suspects he was abused."
She snorted.
"Oh, him, abused, the misunderstood Violet."
Bitterness tainted her tone.
"He stole everything from us, and yet we're no entitled to a menial amount of food. We shall die without any Donegal."
"And your brother made war on James MacDonald 4 years ago, aye."
"Because he thieved on us 6 years ago," she snapped.
"And your father, the same to his father before that." And so on. The feud between their people had existed since the Grants had established themselves in the Highlands at the request of Huntly. Before the Grants, it had been Huntly himself who had endured raids. Before that, the Crown had fended off renegade MacDonald parties, shoring up the rampart defences to deflect the lairds of the Isles. Urquhart was a strategic stronghold and would consolidate power over the entire region should the devil acquire it.
"The history matters none," Donegal said, jerking the laces tight, drawing her clammy tunic tightly against her body.
"He'll retaliate. You're nae to say another word to my brother until I've spoken with him," she replied.
"That matters none either.
The laird kens you must have done it, but has demanded you come to the gates so MacDonald can see for himself that you canna possibly be a lad."
The guard braced his knee against her rear and cinched the strings, causing her to lurch.
"I'll nae ask," she gasped, as the dress was put into place, "how you became so deft with a lady's garments, my friend," she teased.
He leaned around her face as he now tied the laces, a grin softening his jaw and brow.
"Ah, well, I've been known to make the lasses swoon. You being the first, eh?"
She batted his face away and he chuckled.
"Indeed, I was young and misguided, aye. My father's boot to your ear, and a sunlight of hard labour taught you never to take such liberties, I recall."
The chuckle rumbling in his throat intensified.
"Nay, lass, on the contrary, it taught me never to get caught."
"You're insufferable,"
she jested, smirking and scurrying away to grab her shawl. She fixed the tunic, which protruded from her dress sleeves, for she hadn't had time to don a proper chemise. With her proud Grant tartan cast about her torso, she looked the picture of plain and proper.
"Ah, but now you've done it, milady, aye?"
"I fear I have," she mumbled under her breath, exhaling. "I'm sorry, Donegal. It's just, we're desperate."
"I ken that,"
he replied soberly. "Let down your auburn hair, me lady. It's one of your beauties, and the most unlad-like thing about ye." She blushed. Of all the ridiculous reactions at his compliment, for he meant it purely in the spirit of friendship these days. But her hair, in truth, was her one vanity, for compared to her older sister, she'd always felt plain. Her gown in place, she slipped her feet into a pair of ankle boots made of soft lambskin, but, like all her things, were worn through. A hole had abraded the outside toe on one, and they needed resoling desperately. Still, all in the castle had made concessions, and she wouldn't complain. It wasn't her brother's fault that this sorry poverty had been thrust upon them due to the MacDonald bastard's relentless greed. She let down her wavy curls from the utilitarian bun she'd concealed within her cloak and tried to run a comb through the ends. No use. The prongs snagged in the hopeless tangles, and there was no time to wet it and make it manageable. Instead, she fluffed it down her back, where it tumbled to her waist, and hastened to tie it back in a plain ribbon as she accompanied Donegal downstairs, through the hall, and out into the bailey. Servants scrambled across the slush, pushing carts to safety in a shed, and took shelter in case the enemy laird had returned for a rematch, while guardsmen lined the curtain wall to assess the threat, arrows trained upon their guest.
"There's my sister now,"
she heard Seamus say. She stalled in her tracks, her throat constricting, and a leaden anchor sank in her stomach. Although they'd never been introduced, she knew it was the devil MacDonald himself, perched in the saddle on the opposite side of the portcullis grate.
"You're just out riding, were you not, Aeliana?"
Seamus demanded as his wife, Elizabeth, and their sister, Peggy, flanked him demurely, watching her, ever the beautiful ladies that she had never been and would never be. Her gaze flitted from her sister-in-law to Peggy, then to Seamus once more, so regal in his deep blue plaid draped over his shoulder, his heavy belt, and, she noted, his claymore sheathed across his back, dagger hilts protruded from his waist, and his skein dhu was lodged strategically in his boot. He'd prepared himself to greet James MacDonald as a proud stoic warrior and their parents' only son to survive infancy. But as her eyes returned to the laird atop his glossy stallion, she didn't see the disgusting cretin she'd expected. She saw striking blue eyes, dark blonde hair waving wildly around his face, and a neck with those ever-present braids which she could see, now that she was close to him, were knotted with wooden beads. Not bones, as he'd been rumoured to don, and he was obviously dishevelled from his chase. His jaw was scruffy and dark whiskers, those of a young man filling into his prime. His cheekbones were cut high, his nose long but firm and proud. Around his shoulders hung a heavy pelt of deerskin over his doublet coat, and a bright red tartan draped across his chest, held in place at the shoulder by a bejewelled badge denoting the clan's symbol. His thighs, partly visible due to his kilt splaying about him, were powerful and bulged with bands of long muscle, and his boots, deerskin insulated with fleece tufting out of the tops, were fine quality, and certainly not wearing through the toes or soles like hers were. She nearly scoffed at the thought, and instinctively wiggled her little toe, rubbing through her lambskin, as a chill shivered through her. She should have changed into a fresh chemise. He was magnificent. Not the beast she'd always conjured to mind when reliving the horrible day they had last been besieged, even if his face was filled with fury now. Her stomach twisted nervously as he managed the reins of his cavorting destrier, puffing steam into the air. Blast it, but she hadn't expected handsome, nor had she expected his gaze to hold hers, as if she'd surprised him too. Memories swelled to life of clenching sweet Peggy's hand and ferrying her to safety as Urquhart was attacked by men whose faces were muddied and painted in blue woad. She lifted her chin to push away the unwanted thought, rolled back her shoulders. This MacDonald bastard, no matter how handsome, was a Narvich, an enemy, if there ever was one. She wouldn't allow him the pleasure of watching her shrink from his hard gaze. Instead, she walked up close to the portcullis, as if to taunt him, folding her arms and examining his features for herself. His piercing blue stare followed her, evoking shivers across his skin. She could feel her brother's glare upon her, too, though she ignored it. She might feel guilty about bringing trouble, but she wouldn't apologise for stealing a wee bit of food. She was a noble-born Grant. it was as much her duty as Seamus's to look after the folk who supported this home with their labours, and they could no longer afford to await word from the Crown as to whether or not their recompense would be awarded. Seamus leaned into her ear, as she felt Laird MacDonald's gaze still scrutinising her, perusing her figure with his devilish eyes. His moniker was proving to be true. Devil indeed.
"Pray tell,"
Seamus whispered so softly she could barely make out his words,
"why I must face down this bastard and his accusations of thievery."
She remained high-chinned and gave the MacDonald a searing perusal of her own, as he was doing to her, causing his eyes to narrow curiously. He was probably conjuring some nefarious plot, for he looked as if he contemplated something.
"Sakes, brother, but I can barely stand to be so close to him. Breathing the same air as him will surely bring about a case of hives."
A nearby guardsman snorted at her jest, and she smiled sweetly at her adversary, knowing by the tightening of his brow that he had heard her. Then his gaze dipped to her lips, then back to her eyes again.
"Sister,"
Seamus rubbed the bridge of his nose,
"were you outside the gates today?"
"I was. 'Tis a lovely day for a country ride, one of the few pleasures we still have, since all other pleasures have been stolen from us,"
she replied, making no effort to hide her flippant tongue as her gaze bore into James MacDonald's. The MacDonald harrumphed, grumbling,
"Your sister has a disagreeable tongue. Nay, I wonder why she's no married yet."
The nerve! Anger flared in her chest at his insult, even if it had been delivered by a deep, husky voice, inducing more shivers across her skin than she should be proud of. What did he expect from the Grants? Kindness and benevolence?
"Too bad you'll never ken a whit about my tongue," she snapped in return.
James's brow shot up in surprise at her lewdness, and she smirked, crossing her arms with satisfaction and popping her hip.
"That's enough, Eliana," Seamus admonished her. "God in heaven, why must you be so brash?"
She scoffed.
"And why must we pretend to offer this man salutary kindness? He rushes to our gates, accusing us of what this time?"
"Of a lad thieving food from their camp,"
her brother replied, his head turned toward her and away from Laird MacDonald, as he raised a knowing eyebrow.
"Oh, a lad thieving, eh?"
Eliana scoffed, then addressed MacDonald, still perched in his saddle, seething.
"An eye for an eye, then?"
A twinkle glinted in his two handsome eyes, as if he wished to return her insults with delightfully accurate precision.
"Nay, lass, your clan reaved us first, remember?"
James argued.
"Because who reaved us before?"
She tapped her chin, feigning to ponder.
"Oh, that's right, your father."
James groaned, raising his eyes heavenward with barely leashed composure.
"But what does this have to do with us?"
she asked,
"or more specifically, me." "The lad rode here, through these very gates, nay more than 10 minutes ago," MacDonald said, "and they said that you're the only one to enter this afternoon. Coincidence?"
"Ugh, do I look like a lad?"
she asked, though she regretted her question the moment she asked it. His smile lifted dangerously. Good God above, she'd opened herself to an insult of the worst sort.
"Ask no a question you wish no to be answered," he quipped.
She balled her fists.
"Produce the culprit, and we'll have nary a problem,"
the MacDonald said, holding her glare as he resituated his grip on his reins with a creaking of leather, clearly annoyed that this questioning was taking so long.
"Your safe didn't they come here,"
she replied.
"I'm the only one who's been out riding. Our lads must labour overmuch,
to compensate for all that has been stolen from us and have nae time for countryside leisure. And if you must ken, in sooth, I was out hunting.
That much was true. She'd been perusing hares when she'd left Urquhart and had merely happened upon the MacDonald camp.
Unsuccessfully, I might add, which means once more we'll go hungry.
She folded her arms, unable to tame her tongue. She wanted to needle this bastard who had made life difficult, made her and her sister's marriage prospects sink as deep as Loch Ness, for with their poverty came the lovely benefit of no dowry. Hers had been stolen, complete with the beautiful pearl earrings inlaid in gold that their mother had gifted both Peggy and herself. Aeliana had kept hers in her jewellery chest, which MacDonald had stolen. No one would wish to marry a lady who brought no wealth to the table, except maybe a lowly baron. But her attempt to thwart his curiosity backfired. The anger in his brow softened as his eyes drew together to search her face, travelling over the ridges of her cheekbones and nose, her earlobes that sat empty of adornments, unlike Peggy's. For Peggy still had the earrings their mother had given her. She'd been wearing them that fateful day.
I suppose there is a merit in decorating myself like a lady.
His assessment travelled over her wild red-brown hair, tumbling over her shoulder from her ribbon, over her figure again, making her squirm while fluttering ravaged her belly. What was he looking at? She'd never been the bonny sister that the men enjoyed glimpsing. Peggy was comely, with soft, tantalising cleavage, flared hips that she'd heard men mutter were good for birthing, pink cheeks, pillowy lips, and rich brown eyes like their brother, while Aeliana had been blessed with plain hazel eyes and a faint speckling of freckles across her nose. And yet not once had James MacDonald turned his head toward her older sister, who always turned a man's head. On second thought, perhaps it was a lass who stole from me, James finally concluded, a satisfied smirk darkening his face once again as he sat upright in the saddle. Tell me, do you wear trousers, m'lady? I can see you looking like a lad. She gasped, as did Elizabeth and Peggy. Shocked at his rudeness, she saw the corner of his mouth tip up. He knew he'd gotten under her skin, so he hadn't been intrigued by her femininity, as she'd dared to think he might be. And why on God's green earth did she want the animal to be interested? Mind yourself, James, her brother growled, straightening his belts and filling his chest with a deep breath to broaden his already broad torso. There's no need to be insulting. She's lady-born and bred and will be treated so.
My sister doesna see her beauty like we do,
Peggy spoke up.
Your arrow, sir, was aimed to hurt.
Bless her siblings for defending her. Still, the remark stung, reminding her that even with a dowry, she'd likely remain an untouched spinster, for what man wanted a woman with freckles?
I ken nae who your thief was,
Aeliana began, her throat scratchy with emotion,
but I command the lad for delivering justice, no matter how menial as a pile of vegetables, to a thief like ye.
She replied, and though she tried to bolster her confidence again, she knew the sting of his remark tainted her words now.
I never said the thief stole vegetables.
Laird MacDonald's smirk rose into a dastardly grin. Her mouth dropped open to launch a rebuttal, when her words froze in her throat. Seamus exhaled long and low and perched his hands on his hips, his gaze flitting sidelong at her with increasing frustration.
Aeliana, Seamus said, his voice gruff. He speaks Honestly, this time, he didn't say vegetables, only food.
Damn it! She'd ensnared her...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?